Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Red Men Radio. It's episode number 71. Guess who's back?
Hi.
Back again.
It's me.
It's Paul Machen.
In body, but not necessarily in spirit.
That's fine. We've got a great kickoff question coming from Luke Sandbrook today. And it's football related and it's Liverpool related. So you don't have to go mental on your keyboards. If you could go back
it's
in
not
time.
Death of animal related, which is
always a good thing. Mm. We can make it that way.
Nope, that's not.
We've done that once before.
Never again.
The Red Men team. No,
this is a great question.
It's Bosch, mate. If you could go back in time to any Liverpool game and take one current Liverpool player with you, which match would you replay and who would you take with you, Mr. Paul Machen?
So it turns out that there's a couple of games that we've all got on the brain when it comes to this one. Si had a great shout. He said Alisson, Kiev, which, you know what? We could just stop it there because yeah. We'd have six European Cups. We'd all be loads up. Yeah. The first one that came to my mind was Jordan Henderson against Chelsea in 13-14. But my only thing with that is that he doesn't, the Jordan Henderson we've got now isn't the Jordan Henderson that we had then. I don't think Jordan Henderson, I think he's a much better all-round footballer now than he was then, but he hasn't got the, I don't think he's got the pace of the engine that he had in 13-14. So he plays Gerrard's position, which we don't need in that team. So I am taking Mohamed Salah back to Athens.
Well, that's really nice of you. You got to pick three things and poo-poo my answer all in your answer. Great. Nice start to the show, Paul. Absolutely fantastic. Here's why Chris is wrong about Henderson and Jordan.
Expand on your thinking on your incorrect answer.
While I go and give you Salah to Athens, and also the funny answer, which wasn't even your answer, which was Si's answer, that you did give him credit. Nice to see you again. Have you had a nice week off, mate? You better fucking not leave me fucking hanging. You better fucking take that fucking hand. So
why Jordan Henderson?
I never said Jordan Henderson to Chelsea. Just give me a minute to think of an answer, will you? I'm taking Jordan Henderson to Chelsea, and I'm taking Jordan Henderson to Chelsea because he was what was missing. He could have given us that league title, and I don't care that he's not quite the same player. Listen, you could take Salah to Athens, but he's never played with that team.
Yeah.
So Jordan Henderson does know how that team works. You might be screaming at your phone or your headphones now, take Naby Keita.
Screaming at your headphones?
I don't know why. Like, Paul, they've all got mics in them, lad.
Absolutely.
So you can do that nowadays. You know, 3 years ago, I'd have been a right tiff for saying that. Yeah. But no, Jordan Henderson, because he knows what's needed. He knows what that side needed, and he can be that for one night only.
One night only. I like the idea of, I think this will be a much more prevalent answer probably by the end of the season, but Naby Keita in that game, doing the Jordan Henderson, being that box-to-box, every blade of grass midfielder.
He's much better suited for it nowadays anyway. Mm. So we'll go into the news in brief, and then we're going to talk about Liverpool versus Palace. Then we're going to talk about our Premier League rivals. I enjoyed this last week with Steve. It's nice to sort of get out of our normal wheelhouse and talk about some other sides and just be dead biased while we're talking about them, to be honest. And then we're going to do your questions at the end. So the news in brief, Karius is pretty much gone now to Besiktas. Something like a £2 million loan fee, 2-year deal, £7.25 million is going to be given to Liverpool at the end of that. Absolutely, like, mind-bogglingly good business from Liverpool if you think that he's completely bottomed out.
Yeah, when you consider that we effectively will be making a profit on a guy
doubling our money.
More or less, on a guy who, at the minute now, he's almost not a player. You know what I mean? He's just taking up a space in the squad in terms of how useful he is for you at the minute. I put a tweet out about this yesterday, and it's funny how angry people are around this. I know I know what he did. I'm not stupid. I was there. I was literally there when he made the mistakes in the Champions League final. But I just wish him all the best more than anything. Like, because I do. Mignolet's fine, isn't he? But I can't understand how we've ended up coming out of a summer transfer window with Simon Mignolet as our second choice goalkeeper when we've let two guys who, and look, we can talk about the qualities and whatever if we wish to, but I think two of the goalkeepers who suit our style of play better.
I think what we'll see is Liverpool move for a goalkeeper in January and Simon Mignolet go out.
Yeah.
And I think Klopp's taking a calculated risk on this one, is that somebody's coming in and we're getting good value for money on Loris Karius right now, and we're maybe not on Simon Mignolet. But a few months down the line, when everybody's shitting themselves about staying in the league or something, someone will come in for Simon Mignolet and maybe spend a bit of money.
It's interesting that we've got that clause in there. Effectively, we're effectively selling Karius to Bishop. Unless he's terrible, in which case, because what I mean by this is there's no way where we're sending him out to rehabilitate him. Liverpool are not looking to get Loris Karius back off the end of this deal, because if he's good and he rehabilitates himself, he's going to play for Besiktas, he's going to tick all the boxes, and he's going to complete his move there. So it tells you all you need to know. And if Liverpool don't want him, then that's sound.
It tells you exactly what Liverpool spending nearly 70 million quid on a goalkeeper tells you, that Alisson's the number one at Liverpool for now in the foreseeable.
Yeah.
So of course we were going to be getting rid of Karius. It's just about when, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So we'll move on then. Hillsborough charges against St Norman Betterson have been dropped. Just a little warning from us, you can do your own reading. BBC News is always a good place to do this, but do not talk about it on social media or anything like that, because if you truly want the families to get justice, then you have to keep your water to yourselves on this one. So we'll move on from that one. Liverpool, the City Council is actually looking into plans from Liverpool FC, Paul, to stage 10 Anfield concerts or other sporting events per season. Now, the residents of Anfield have said that, you know, they don't want it to happen. Obviously, to have these type of games. Anyway.
Even if it's a new word, it's a word I understood the context of. Disruptive.
Disruptive. There we go. Fucking hell, mate. This is what three and a half hours sleep does to a man.
Yeah. Over a 4-year period.
What?
Inevitably, if we're talking about how hard it is for someone like Loris Karius. Imagine he was Loris Karius, but he had to live in Anfield over the last 30 years. The locals haven't had it easy over this time, and I understand all that. I mean, the problem is that that's not going to get less. Anfield is going to become more and more of a destination. It's going to become busier and busier. And
what's going on with the support network? You know, the rail, buses and all that. Isn't that supposed to have all been...
It's probably all the funds have probably been diverted by big fat Mayor Joe to
it's
Everton's
not fucking potholes, I'll tell you, it's not that, mate.
Saying that, they've sorted the road outside, have you noticed that?
One road was fantastic.
But it was horrendous, to be fair.
You still have to dodge the speed bumps.
Yeah,
I mean, if they're going to sort anything, sort the big gap that you can get a car through in between the speed bumps. I mean, I don't want you to do that.
No,
because then I'd have to actually drive over some of the worst speed bumps, speak nose.
Please don't do that.
Interestingly, they're talking NFL games, Paul. So, sorry, residents of Anfield. Chris Pajak is throwing his almighty weight behind said move.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, big venues do that. I don't know what it means as a financial boon to Liverpool, but if it is one, I miss Anfield being available for other things. We've talked about it plenty of times in the past. Not even that. The England playing at Anfield, that kind of stuff. And I want Anfield to be a venue in that regard. You know, they're doing it with the Etihad. They obviously play gigs and you can, if you get to Liverpool to be doing that, it means that when a major tournament comes around, you've got a case study there that says it's capable of doing all these things and handling all these different types of events and that. Fine. And if it means I get to see, like, if Paul McCartney plays at Anfield, or that's, you get boss, Oasis at Anfield, or the Foo Fighters at Anfield, or whatever, then again, Anfield residents, I am dreadfully sorry. And look, we're joking. If there is really serious ramifications, obviously we'll cover all that kind of stuff in due course. But no, I am on a pure selfish top line level. seeing major artists just in the city of Liverpool.
Mate, yeah. We've got a parking space right by there.
It's true. It's true.
I mean?
Yeah, but you know, we lived.
Think about the money you could save.
We
could. It's like £6 there, no, mate.
Absolutely fine.
Every time you go to a gig.
If you do that,
that's like £6 a year.
You pay for every 10th gig you go to, just in the money you're saving in parking. We grew up.
Cost a coffee stamp, isn't it?
Absolutely. We grew up in Liverpool when there were no major concert venues. Everything was either the Royal Court, when you could fit about 3 people in there. Obviously, you've got the Liverpool Echo Arena.
I've forgotten all about it.
Yeah, so, you know, if Liverpool can host mega events, then yeah.
Okay, final little piece of news in brief. Clavin's gone to Calgary. I'm a little bit gutted about this one. I don't see the sense in this move.
See, I'm less asked about this than I am about the Karius one, because Clavan's fine, isn't he? He's just fine.
Exactly.
I've got no feelings one way or the other towards Ragnar Clavin. He is another one of those. I tweeted something about him, someone else tweeted back. Like, I think you can 100% say that without doubt, Ragnar Clavin was a centre back for Liverpool.
He was. There's not much more that you can say. It's
exactly.
A great tweet, that actually.
Yeah, fine, absolutely fine. We wish him all the best.
My issue with it is that, you know, we don't have another left sided centre half, really.
Yeah.
One that fits the mould, you know what I mean? Joe Matip, fine for right. Dejan Lovren, fine for right. Whenever we saw him at left, although we were told he was a left centre-half to begin with, he never really cut the mustard
there.
Well,
we'd still say that Lovren was a left-sided centre-half, wouldn't you?
But from what I've seen, he wasn't very good at it.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen him be really good at the right-sided centre-half. And I like Clavin. I thought he was a good squad player. I imagined that he'd be good for the squad. But this is the manager that we've got.
Yeah.
These are the decisions that he makes based on the humans that he's got in his squad. And I wouldn't swap that for the world.
Well,
I'm just disappointed that it's him that's gone.
Well, it's telling that he came out in his press conference, didn't he? He was talking about the squad depth. And he basically said, this is the situation we're in. If you're the kind of person who's not happy with the situation you're in, then effectively, I don't want you at at the football club. And it's interesting that would happen around a time when, you know, we're shipping Karius out, that you're seeing Clavan go out and maybe a couple. I don't think it will relate to some of the younger lads, but someone like a Clavan, fair play. Look, he's been given an option of being part of what could be a very successful Liverpool side this year or going to play for Calgary.
He always wanted to play in Serie A.
Yeah,
he was a Calgary fan when he was a kid.
Yeah, of course he was growing up, like, absolutely.
Interesting, though, that... a question for you. Has his stock risen since he's been at Liverpool? Do you think in Europe?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's decent, that, isn't it, for a player who moved at that age for that sum of money to go
100%.
Out and people think he's a better player now?
Well, this is the point. No one had heard of Ragnar. We played against him twice and I had no memory of his existence.
Had heard of Ragnar Clavin.
Yeah, they've heard of everything, haven't they? But yeah,
just not fucking socks.
Yeah, just not socks and showers. The Clavin thing, you're right. Look, he's now a Liverpool defender. That carries way. Fair play to him. He goes down more fondly remembered than a lot of centre halves we've had over the years. But also, big shrug.
Okay, we get to talk about it. I've not spoken to you about it. You were at Selhurst Park last night.
Yeah.
You got to witness Liverpool dog out a victory there based on defence.
Wow.
Not.
I go away for a week.
Offence.
So you've been unchecked for a week, haven't you?
It's true, mate.
Absolutely.
I was talking to a guy the other day, Paul. I think...
Was he fit?
No. Don't judge people like that. I was talking to a guy the other day and we were talking about the American footy. I can't remember if I told you this or not. And we had this conversation for about 5 minutes or something and then I went... What are you talking about there, mate? And he's going, you know, American footy. I was like, we're not having the same conversation here, bud. And he's like, yeah, Rooney's just gone there. I was like, no, that's not the American football, mate. But he's technically right.
Absolutely.
He's right. I'm in the wrong gear.
The American
he
footy.
He was talking about
absolutely.
The MLS.
The footy in America. If you said it that way, you'd have had no
and
doubt
I got
what
onto
you were
it
talking about.
Away. It was about 10 minutes before I got onto it. Which is a bit worrying. It says that I'm not a great listener. Something my wife probably knows already.
So Crystal Palace.
Yeah, we beat them by 2-0, Paul.
We did. And
it was magnificent.
Barring a couple of hairy moments, you know, there was a point where with about 10, 15 to go, I was looking at it and going, I'd be happy with 1-0 here. I didn't think that going into the game. I really wanted us to put on a display. I want us to end Roy Hodgson forever and ever and ever because I'm just so embittered
he's
about
got
his
good
time.
Side there,
he's got a bloody good side there. They've got...
Imagine what he could do with a centre-forward.
If, yeah. Well, this is the thing. The problem is, of course, is that in order to get a better version of the centre forward that he needs to improve that side, you've got to go and buy Lewandowski, or you've got to go and buy Cristiano Ronaldo, or you've got to go and buy, you know, whatever.
Someone with feet would probably do the job, to be fair.
There's a limit to what he's always going to be able to do, but I think he's kind of looked out to some extent. He's looked out to a side that's got a good solid target, man.
I can see that you can be completely impartial of judging Roy Hodgson's side. He's completely looked out there.
Oh, no, he has, because think about the teams that he's had and the teams that he's had to construct. Like, he's fallen ass backwards into Wan-Bissaka being a thing. You know what I mean? He's just stumbled upon the best right back this country's ever developed, apart from Trent Alexander-Arnold. To be honest, take your pick. You know, and I think that Wan-Bissaka is a very, very exciting player. He's got Zaha, who's just entering the prime.
I love how both me and you don't know his name.
What? Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka?
Bissaka. Whatever I said was right.
Okay.
Now it's like when you hear something too many times.
Okay.
Words lost all meaning. He's just got loads of pace. He's got talented players. This is true of loads of teams, but what happens when you take one of those players, important players out of that team? Like, you take Zaha out and they just don't win football matches. So, you know what I mean? I'll give him limited praise in that regard.
I think he's got a great side there. And I actually think Christian Benteke's a good fit for them. Mm. It's just unfortunate that he can't finish. But the others...
Well...
For him and them.
Yeah.
A little bit.
For all the games, I don't really give a shit.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think he'll change him either, because he's getting bits out of the two lads either side. He's getting bits out of time. And Zaha, so it's good. Why are we talking about Palace? Liverpool won last night.
Well, no, because it's interesting, because I think it helps to qualify what Liverpool did there. And I think there'll be people who looked at this weekend's results and looked at what Man City did, and I've got the tendrils are out there, and I can feel the emotional currents of these people who are already
staring at you again.
They're counting the goal difference already, and people are looking at that 6-1
victory.
It's
only one, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But people are looking at the goal.
There are definitely some people out there looking at the goal difference. Well, I am not one of them.
And I am absolutely one of them. There's people who are doing that, and they're gonna watch every minute of footy that Man City play this season. They're gonna end up really upset. It would be very easy to go, Crystal Palace, Roy Hodgson. We should be Crystal Palace. Man City won 6-1, so Liverpool need to win 7-1 this week. It's not how it works. That's a dead good side. Albeit there was zero atmosphere generated by their fans last night, but normally a very difficult ground to go to as well. And so a 2-0 win on the balance of things, taken in context. That's a brilliant win for Liverpool.
It gave me more satisfaction than the 4-0 against West Ham, because it's a much harder game and a much harder place to go to, and their qualities. They'll win a lot of football matches, to the point where I was looking at last night and I turned around to people and said, they might be the best of the rest.
Mm.
Like, genuinely, it's going to be probably between them and Everton chasing down Arsenal.
I can't see
anyone else in that race.
There's a small pack of teams, isn't there? And you've got like your Leicester are in there, and there's maybe a Wolves, depending on how
well
they
or a Watford if they can hold up for a whole season.
Or a Watford. But they're definitely within that pack. The stability they've got of keeping Roy Hodgson as well for the season and having him build and whatever will help them definitely. But
your match reaction. I didn't have time to watch it last night, but Gomez was in the title, so I'm assuming that you thought he was sensational last night.
I did. Yeah, I thought he was brilliant. To the point where I must have just been spending more time specifically watching him. Because everyone was raving about Van Dijk and fair play. It doesn't surprise me that Van Dijk was brilliant. That, for me, was just a Van Dijk performance. That's how he plays. I watched Gomez with far more interest because it was something we were talking about in the build-up to the West Ham game, about this whole Gomez-Trent partnership on the right-hand side of defence, and how that will be perceived as a weakness by opponents, and how they will look to target us. And they did. Yeah. They absolutely did, and rightly so, because look, Trent had a bit of a torrid time last time at Selhurst Park. I thought he stepped up wonderfully as well. But Gomez, I just thought he was absolutely outstanding.
For me, and I've just done the stats and tactics show, and we'll maybe do a little bit on the defence in a minute from that. But for me, I watched that. I fully went into that stats and tactics show, and I wanted to look at the defence. I wanted to look at Virgil van Dijk, and I wanted to look at Joe Gomez. And I went into it, and I rewatched it, and I Van Dijk for me stood out yesterday. But having watched it back, and I say this in the show, Gomez was much better. Van Dijk did the heading really well, and he stands out because he's a fucking big guy. Yeah. You can't help notice him. But Joe Gomez, man, I mean, I think if I remember the stats, 14 times Trent went up against Zaha and he only won 5 of those duels, whereas Joe Gomez was over there every single time, covering that space, covering for Trent when he goes forwards. It was his reading of the game, it was his covering depth, it was his keeping his line with Virgil van Dijk, it was shouldering players off the ball, it was getting quick feet into Benteke, it was watching Benteke bring it down. 3 times he does this. He either chests it or knees it to take a second touch, and as soon as the ball's by his right foot, that's when Gomez tackles. He's not trying to get it when he's chesting it down, yeah. He's getting it when Benteke wants to get it under control. Yeah. Such a professional, experienced, mature performance.
And when you consider, and he was the same against West Ham, to be fair, and the bits we've seen of him in pre-season, he's not just in there like a rabbit in headlights going, do the job, tick the boxes, do the simple things, get it done. He just looks like he's meant to be in that team. And, you know, a couple of those times when he nip in and carry the ball out as well. And the moment it stood out, and I think Ross referenced it on the final word, was there's a moment where Zaha goes through and Gomez just tracks him and goes in and wins the ball. And as soon as he did that, I was like, that right there, because that was their moment. That was their moment. That was everything that they'd set up for, and they banked on Joe Gomez not being good enough to handle Zaha doing that. And turns out Gomez is, I mean, he's at least as fast as Zaha. There were times yesterday when he looked faster than
him. Puts the jet engines on a few times and starts pulling away.
And when you consider,
you know what he does as well? He pushes off them. Yeah. As he's turning the corner with them, he'll just put a little arm on the shoulder and just stunt their movement and then sprint away. It's so clever. Like.
He's brilliant. And again, it's that pace thing that we were concerned about, the inexperience. But the beauty is, you can have inexperience, but if you've got pace, it can bail you out of certain situations where both Trent and Gomez have actually got really good, you know, the very game intelligence as well, very bright lads when it comes to, you know, to footy. But in addition to that, if they do get caught and whatever, because look, from our very basic level of playing football in 5-a-side, a little give and go and a ball around the corner for someone who's already in full flight is a very difficult thing to defend at the best of times. And again, they tried that and they tried it and they tried it and they got zero joy out of Gomez. And that's all the testament in the world to him, because, we said this the week before last, it will have been, about how he's being given this opportunity, he's not going to get this opportunity again to play games, because if he's crap, Lovren will come back in and Lovren will just be the partner for Van Dijk until he gets
injured. And the thing that I saw from Gomez last night that I'd not seen from him before was that being aggressive into the challenge. I've not noticed that from him, and maybe it's because he doesn't do it at right back because it's the wrong position to do it. But, you know, Lovren talked before the Champions League final, didn't he, of, you know, Klopp wants me to be an aggressive defender, and what you're seeing is Virgil van Dijk covering that depth and Joe Gomez going for the ball when it's getting into the striker's feet, and he's not giving them a moment's breath, and he'll go and press and he'll hold the line. It was absolutely superb.
But he did the same against, he did it against Arnautovic, didn't he? And that, more the physicality, it's, again, people go into the game going, I'm targeting you. And you would think Joe Gomez was a little passive because he's quite a quiet lad. He's, you know, he's well spoken. He doesn't come across like cocky. He doesn't look like he's a lad who's got loads of swagger or whatever about him. But, he's had some real battling qualities in the two games so far, and they're the things where, again, as a centre forward, they'll come away from that having not got any change out of him in terms of, you know, in terms of pace or aerially, and then you're getting kicked and pushed and poked and prodded throughout the entire 90 minutes by him as well. So these guys are walking off the pitch thinking, bloody hell, I've been in a game here as well.
Yeah, okay. We'll move it on then. I want to show you a little clip from the Stats and Tactics. This is the episode this week. It's called Analysing Liverpool's Superb Defence. If you're new to Stats and Tactics and you're not a subscriber to the website, you will be new to it, which means you don't know what the show's about. So I'm here to tell you. It's dead easy. We look every time Liverpool have a game in depth at all the stats and all the tactical things that we can notice during a game. We'll watch the game back. We'll look at it and we'll see if we can highlight anything that we think is worth noting. It's really well received show on the website. People have been giving me fantastic feedback. Now here's a nice little clip and a motorbike.
That was everyone legging it to the website there.
Right, look at that. That's not Liverpool.
This is now 85 minutes into the game. You've got a nice line of four defenders. Perfect. You've got a nice compact midfield three. You've got Naby Keita going out towards the ball. You've got Jordan Henderson. You've got Gini Wijnaldum. Not only that, you've got Mo Salah and Roberto Firmino there. All within 25 yards of our goal. All when it's 1-0. What a difficult place. Look how many Palace... There's one lad in the box. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We've got 9. That's not Liverpool Football Club. That's not the Liverpool that you're told that you support. That's the Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp that can defend when they need to defend. We saw it in that game. We walked out of there with 3 points, and it's because of defending like this in key situations and key times of the game that we're able to do this.
So we did this last week, me and Steve. Really enjoyed it. And it was just to talk a little bit about our rivals. Obviously, you briefly mentioned City smashing Huddersfield 6-1 at the weekend. Let's have a talk through it now. Obviously, you've seen the game. Did it worry you at the time? And does it worry you that how amazing Manchester City still look?
No, it doesn't worry me. It's just how good Man City are. They are what they are. If we were coming into this campaign and we'd both, let's say Man United had won the league last year and mm-hmm. Liverpool and City had been second or third or fourth or whatever, and then we'd done what we'd done and then we came into the season as we are, but Man City had started this way, I'd be like, oh Christ, it could be, you know, it could be them taking a step up. Have they taken a bigger step up with them? They can't really, there's nowhere for them to go. They're not going to have a better season domestically than they had last year. They could, you know, it's possible for them to have an equally good one, I guess, but it's still highly unlikely. Them starting well is to be expected. I think there's probably a few people who saw the Kevin De Bruyne injury thought that somehow their team was going to come undone. He didn't play in the first game either, as I recall. So, you know.
And he was injured apart last season. Really,
you know, exactly. So the thing is, and also, and the thing to take hope and heart from in regards to the Man City thing is that it happens a lot of times with teams being brightly very early on. And then you find it difficult in continuing that. Man City's title success last season wasn't built on 6-1 wins. It was built on scraping last-minute wins against, in tight circumstances.
Southampton. Raheem Sterling.
Exactly. I think Huddersfield as well, they did a similar thing. So there was probably like a handful of games where they scored in injury time. That was what won the, you know, I mean, it didn't because they won it by that many points, but you take my meaning on that. I'm not surprised.
They're the results that give a team confidence and a squad confidence and the belief that they're not going to be beaten. We've seen Man United do it for years.
Yeah.
They're always the most important ones when you think you're not getting something out of the game and you get everything out of the game. For me, I look at it and I must admit, you know, I am worried about them because, you know, I want Liverpool to win the title. I think they're better set up for domestic success than we are.
Mm-hmm.
I think their game plan works better against teams who sit back than us. I'm yet to see... We haven't played enough games with these new players for me to see it any different than last season, to be honest with you. We've played Palace, who were a very counter-attacking side, and we've done them, but I want to see a bank of games. I feel like they've got the experience and the know-how to be able to do that. I still see us right now, and this could change in a month's time, as being perfectly set up for European football.
Mm-hmm.
We've still like to exploit that space in the channels, for example. That's the type of stuff that you can do in European aways, where we just don't get the opportunity in away games in the Premier League a lot of the time. So for me, I do look at it and I am a little bit worried. But, you know, with the additions of Fabinho and Keita and Alisson, that could change. We're two games into the league season. This isn't the best Liverpool that we're going to see this season.
Oh, God, Liverpool are miles off where we need to be. Just look at the front three. You know, Mane's got 3 goals in 2 games. He's been the best of our front three so far, but I wouldn't say he's been world class so far this season. Salah looks off the pace, Firmino looks off the pace. That's absolutely fine. Again, it's 2 games into the season, and contextually, you've got to look around the league at the minute. And I said this probably in the season preview, that I think the season's going to be defined by the first 4 games and probably the last 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at the moment, all Liverpool have got to do for me is pick up win the next 2 games for now, you know, as a very basic start to that. The goal difference thing will probably even itself out, you know, over the course of the season, and then you'll be presented with those sliding doors moments as the season progresses. One of them last season was us getting tonked by Man City after we got Mane sent off. I think another most people watching
would look at the defence since then.
Yeah, you know, most of us would look at that Man City game and say that we felt we were well in with the Chelsea winning that game before the red card. If that happens, it happened. Something maybe happens differently. We had a terrible run of form around that time as well, where we just couldn't. We drew so many games of football.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
That's going to be the telling thing. I don't think Liverpool need to be winning. We don't need more. We're not going to have more 7-0 wins this season than we had last season.
It'd be nice, though.
What we need, well, yeah, but what we need to have is more 2-1 wins. Oh. More Palace wins, more 2-1s, more 2-0s, and if we do that, then it will be there.
Everything else will look after itself. I tell you, you talked about the first four games, the first last four games defining a season. Manchester United hasn't gone so well so far. It was a lovely weekend for us, wasn't it? Really,
I was trying to keep track of the scores and I had no phone signal, and once I saw the City score I was like, oh look, I can't be arsed. And again, I mentioned it earlier, but I'm paraphrasing from Paul Tompkins, who said like he's going to try his best not to watch our rivals.
I've read a different tweet out of his twice,
because he said it's too exhausting watching your rivals, because you just get disappointed. So I saw that and thought, oh, I don't need to. Man United are going to win this, because that's what's going to happen. They're going to play Brighton, they're going to win. And then I flicked it on, it was 3-1. I was like, yes, sound. And then obviously, hello. Then it was 3-2 at the end. I thought, it's normally you that does that.
Yeah, because it's normally me that has the broken one.
So yeah, fantastic. And the best thing about it is that they've been gearing up towards this all summer. I don't watch any Man United content, but
you can't miss Goldbridge.
Well, we got a lot of mates who are Man United fans who we work with as well, and they do channels, and you see, and we're subscribed to their channels. So I see the headlines and I see the thumbnails and I see like Mourinho meltdown. What's going on with Jose House, and like, is it time for Mourinho to go? It's fucking delicious, Chris. And that's where we're at the moment, is that if they just keep their heads down and just get on with it, Man United will probably finish third this season, and that should be fine. But
shouldn't be fine, not for them, Paul.
Exactly. but that's the thing, is their fans and it's been bubbling under the surface, because those jives about the style of play hurt them.
Yeah, of course it will. How many years has it been since they've won the title now? They're starting to enter the wilderness years, and they don't even realise it yet, because he's won a couple of tin pots. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's it. You know,
and that's the great thing, because 4 quickly becomes fucking 28. Trust me, we've been through it. Do you know what I mean?
I've been trying to say this to them for a season or two now, and I kind of I've not shouted this from the rooftop so much, because Man United are the ultimate like horror movie villain, aren't they? You know, just when you think they're dead, they come back for another scare, and I can't ever allow myself to sit back with my hands behind my head and, you know, light a cigar to the demise of Man United.
Remind me to show you a video after this. Okay, just say the word cigar to me.
You can't celebrate the demise of Man United, because inevitably they just go out and spend £200 million and then they're fine the next year. And that's the problem. That's the problem with them. But at the minute, it looks like they are combusting. And I've said it to you previously. They are exactly like they're entering into exactly what Liverpool have gone through. Because you know, when Liverpool got into the '90s, all of our best players became pundits, and they, by comparison to their eras, Liverpool fell well beneath those standards. So they were just the ultimate critics of the Liverpool side, and they were always a bit derisory, a bit of sneer when they talked about even the best players and what have you. That's happening to Man United right now. You've got Roy Keane hates them, Scholes hates them, Gary Neville is trying everything in his power to justify defending
everyone. Well, that's like a blanket.
Well, exactly. But, you know, his voice carries weight to Man United fans because they loved him as a player. And even, you know, so his cuts strike deeper than most because, well, they still think they've never replaced him.
Yeah.
Still never replaced Roy Keane as the holding mid. And then now he's looking down his nose at everything they're doing. And it's
fantastic.
You know, it hurts. Okay, wonderful.
We'll move it on. Spurs have been pretty boring, and Kane scored a goal in August, which I was really disappointed with, you know. It's just, I know it didn't matter because he scores like 30 in the other 8 months of the season, but it really pissed them off, and I was all for that.
Yeah, to be fair, like I must admit, I've been checking the scores of the first game of the season, and I did have a little chuckle when I saw he'd not score because I was like, yeah, it's carrying on.
It was quality little aberration.
There's an inevitability to it, isn't it? Maybe it just means that to be fair, if it means that he doesn't score in May, that'd be great.
May would be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely sound.
But they only stop putting the pressure on in February or March, sure. Paul. So maybe that's the month that they need to not.
Yeah,
not
absolutely. Finally, you know, Harry Kane's good, isn't he? And it was inevitable that he was going to do it. I've not, to be honest, Spurs have gone a little bit under the radar.
What happens when you don't do anything in the transfer window?
No, exactly. Like,
because people don't think you can coach a side to be better than they were the year before.
I'm just waiting for it all to fall apart at Spurs, and it's not. But that's the thing, is that it's been bubbling under all summer for them too. Same as Man United, their fans are all a bit windy about it. They're not sure what's going on. They're not happy. But it's fine.
It's because they don't know where they're going to watch the game.
Well, that's true. Like, but they're winning football matches, so it doesn't matter. If they have a couple of bad results, things will start to turn there as well, which is really, again, it's brilliant.
I just don't think that's going to happen. They're too good a side, unfortunately.
It'll be determined by injuries, as ever.
Yeah, I mean, listen, what I would say to Spurs fans, and they don't give a shit what I think, but I'm going to tell you anyway, I truly believe this. Pochettino's very similar to Klopp, and if you can't improve the side, he's not going to spend the friggin' money. What's the point in making your bench a little bit better if he doesn't believe it? If he wants a £75 million centre-back and he's willing to wait for that £75 million centre-back, then he should wait for that £75 million centre-back.
He'll be a long time dead if he's waiting for £75
from
million.
Levy. True, true. And finally, the most mental game of the weekend, the Chelsea-Arsenal game, was absolutely brilliant.
It was, and it was funny because I spent most of the first half thinking, Arsenal are just shit, aren't they?
Yeah.
Arsenal are really bad. And yet, by the time I got to the end of the first half, I was like,
4-2.
They could have been over the hills and far away, won that game. And
I think that's where the shots kept going, Paul.
But this is exactly what I said in January Arsenal would do, and though you can see what all Arsenal are is Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan, and then plug one or two others. Like, oh, we had a really good game, to be fair. They are entirely hinged upon the individual qualities of the players in that team.
Like United.
Yeah. Well, less,
I think Arsenal are changing it. I think Man United truly are.
I think less so. Actually, I think less so with Man United, and only so much as Mourinho's put a stronger base in there, hasn't he? And then he allows the individual talents do their bits, just the Mourinho way, isn't it? Whereas Emery's not had a chance to come in and get everyone up to speed on what they're trying to do. They're doing a really bollocks impression of do you know what they are? The Brendan Rodgers Liverpool. That's exactly what they are at the minute. They are early doors, 12-13, Brendan Rodgers, where, remember when we played Arsenal at Anfield and we'd been doing this passing out from the back very, you know, for a few weeks or whatever, and we were like, "Woo, isn't this exciting?" And we played Arsenal, who were the passing team of the Premier League, and they just passed us to death, and it was like, shit, we're trying to play them at their game. Whereas now Arsenal are trying to play Chelsea, City, Spurs and Liverpool at their own game, and they're miles away from
doing
it. 3 years
behind us, yeah, exactly. You know, and that's what it's going to be. And Chelsea, I think they worry me again a little bit, not because I think that they're the best team in the league, but the fact that they've got 6 points after two games when really they maybe shouldn't have. And that there's something in the back of my mind that thinks back to that Conte season where, you know, it just clicked for those Chelsea players. And if there is a group of players that it can click for, it's these lads that they've got, because they're so used to change and they're so adaptable. And it must be like, you know, when on Footy Manager, if there's an adaptability, like, that must be the first thing on fucking Abramovich's thing.
Adaptability 20.
Because I'm going to change the manager. I'm going to change the manager every week. Yeah. So you're going to have to be adaptable, lads.
No, absolutely. And the thing is, what Man United have lost in recent years is those guys who've been there and done that. Chelsea have got that, and everyone kind of forgets, because they do this up and down thing. They win the league, then the shit, then they win the league, then the shit. Like, they're on course to win the league again by the recent, you know, the recent pattern. The thing is that, look, Sarri's a good manager, isn't he? And they've got, again, they went up a gear. They went up a level when Hazard came onto the pitch, because he's by far and away the best player in that squad, and they've been keeping him in reserve at the minute. So there's more to come from Chelsea. But what another thing that we've seen a lot for Chelsea in the last 20 years is them getting a new manager in, things looking great, and everyone going early on, wow, these are a real power. And then when the euphoria of the new manager and people playing with a bit of freedom meets the crossover point between training and learning a new way of playing under your new manager, like, it's worked with Conte, because he hit upon this, you know, the third to back was like a revolution at the time, and it took half a season for everyone to get onto what the hell was happening. Will Sarri have something that's that?
No, I think Sarri's gone the other way. I think Sarri's just gone, here's what we're playing. I don't have the players because you didn't sack the previous manager in time for me to get a left back in. So we're gonna do this, and we're gonna do this because this is the way that I'm gonna do it, and yous are gonna do it, and that's that. So okay, we've got time for a couple of questions. How long in are we? Okay, we've got time for a few questions then. I'm going to start with @Clopsy20. Hello, Milesy. Where do you think Van Dijk ranks among the top centre-backs today?
I saw, of course, a little bit of Monday Night Football when I got back from the match last night, and I saw Gary Neville doing his, being very churlish about the whole, like, well, you've got to say that Sergio Ramos has won X amount of European Cups, so you can't say that Van Dijk's the best because he hasn't won anything, blah, 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 blah. It's like, great, I love that argument. That's fantastic. That's the argument that stops Leo Messi from being ever, ever, ever compared to Maradona or Pele. Yeah. I think...
This is the thing that always baffles me on this one, is when you are saying who is the best player ever, you are defining that it's not the team that they played in.
Yeah.
Because you were saying the word player.
Yeah.
And you can't judge him on his teammates in this regard.
And in this regard, I mean, I'm not going to rank it because I don't watch enough European football.
Nobody likes to rank it.
Rafa Varane's amazing.
Yeah.
I think he's in that upper echelon of the best centre halves in world.
He's the best centre half in the Premier League, full stop. He's top five in Europe. For me. Yeah. Newcastle Fans TV, you have to pick two players to start from our club. Who are they and why? I'll take this one. Lascelles, because I think he's dead good. And Matt Ritchie, because you told me to pick two. Next question. Mo Syed, Moessi 81. Do you feel Klopp doesn't make the best use of his bench? He either doesn't use all three subs or makes changes very late.
No, I think this is a bit of one of those things that we've always got to find something that we're not happy with at any given time. I've seen a couple of people tweeting about this.
We had loads of questions about this.
Mentioned on commentary or something, because it's weird how you always find that sometimes.
I think, like, it was the fact that Sturridge's average position when I looked at it this morning was on the corner flag, so he must have come on and stood by the corner flag or something with about 3 seconds left to go. His average position, we must have been taking a corner, and that was it.
I'd forgotten that he came on, to be fair. Like, so yeah, I mean, I get it. I think a lot of this comes down to is that people are just hungry to see more of Shaqiri.
Yeah.
People are hungry to see a bit more of Daniel Sturridge.
Maybe people really want to see Fabinho.
There is a question about Fabinho, isn't
there?
There
was about 90 questions about Fabinho.
Well, let's tie it in, because hi, no ban, please. From Christian account, says thoughts about him not being included in the squad for now, and I think it ties into that same thing. I think people see this and they go, I want to see more of him. It's like, just chill your beans. It's
loads of games of footy. We're going to see Fabinho.
A couple of people mentioned the thing to me about the substitutes last night, to be fair, about, like, I'd have brought Shaqiri on. I'm like, I thought about it, and I'm like, who are you going to bring him on for? Do you bring him on in the midfield and run the risk of going a bit too much one way when you've only got a 1-0 lead? Do you bring him on for Mohamed Salah? well, Salah set up the winning goal in the last, you know, what, 2 minutes of the game or whatever. So that, maybe that doesn't happen if you bring Shaqiri on.
If you're going to bring Shaqiri on, it would have been for Firmino.
Maybe.
In that instance.
Well, and the problem we've got with all of these guys, with the exception of Daniel Sturridge, is that what we've seen, you need to discount to some extent what you've seen in pre-season, because you can take, you can gamble in pre-season games. It doesn't matter if the guy doesn't fully understand his role. I mean, for fuck's sake, I said this about the Man United pre-season game. Shaqiri had no idea how Liverpool warm up shots pre-match. He had no idea where the balls were coming from. He was just like a dog chasing his tail, like, the ball comes from me, the ball comes from me, quick, quick. And that is fine in pre-season. And it was great. He had a great little cameo, didn't he, playing in the false nine against Napoli, was it? But this is a Premier League game. You just don't take.
There's no point in taking those risks. And listen, I actually said the substitute that I would make was the one the Klopp made. I'd bring Henderson on for Milner. That was the substitute, because I felt we needed to put our foot on the ball.
Yeah.
And he did that within 30 seconds. He grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck and started moving the ball quickly, which is exactly what you want. Now, you can. It's also the second game of the season after 8 days break.
Yeah.
We're not right now in danger of the squad falling apart. We will see rotation. Yeah. Of course, we'll see rotation. We will see these players as the season goes on. Klopp will tell us when the best time to see these players are. You know, we saw Andrew Robertson put into this side because of a Moreno injury. We saw Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain brought into the side when he was ready to be brought into the side. We all want to say we trust the manager. It's time to show that you trust the manager and not just say it.
We have got there's a list of players the Klopp's got in front of him, and then they're probably subcategory down into different pools, and there's
Match fitness percentages. Can we have match fitness percentages down the right hand side, because everybody needs a match
form
fitness
and morale next to it as well.
Oh, morale, that's a great shout. Where did you get that idea from?
Thanks, Collier Brothers. The two Football Manager references in a show, good, we can do better. There is the 100% fit and 100% match fit pool. And these are the guys who are ready to play 90 minutes week in, week out, until we reach the Champions League when it's two games, and then that'll be a different thing. There is the 100% fit, but not 100%
Sorry,
match fit.
You genuinely lost me. I just zoned out for a second there and you were still talking. Go again.
100% fit, 100% match fit?
Yeah, with you.
100% fit,
yeah.
not yet match fit?
Lost me. I'm just playing.
Okay. And then there's another pool who falls somewhere, you know, on the other side, so maybe not 100% fit, then therefore not match fit. And so what we're finding is there's players who need to play games to get that match sharpness. So that is Roberto Firmino, because he's had a decent amount of training time, not loads, but some. You've got basically what I'm saying is there's still lads going through pre-season effectively. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Jordan Henderson's the prime example of this.
Dejan's going to have to,
exactly. Adam Lallana to some extent, because we're still building up his levels and his resistance.
We're playing games behind closed doors, 60-minute games last week.
Yeah.
You know, that tells you all you need to know. There's lads there that need minutes, and Klopp's getting them minutes.
Yeah.
It just might not be on the first
team
pitch.
And he's got to balance it, because there's some guys that he's gonna have to. It's like spinning the plate. He's gonna have to get them fit while the season's running. But there's other guys who it's a long season. We said this before. This is what I said. Season is defined by the start and the end, and we've got to find a way to win every game at the start, and also find a way to win every game at the end. And the only way we're going to win every game at the end is if we've got players physically capable of taking to the pitch at the end of the season. And so that's what we're doing at the moment, and that's why Jordan Henderson's coming off the bench, because he needs to. We're slowly building him back up to his match sharpness. I think that's why we saw Lallana just in a little bit, because he's probably ready to start dipping his toe in that regard. Oh God, yeah! Don't start me on.
Did you see the Photoshop of the mountain that someone put on his head?
It's incredible.
You couldn't even tell the difference.
I didn't. I actually zoomed in and I was like, mountain. I think that might just be his hair.
No, I think it was a mountain. I think I've been up.
No way to know.
Who knows? If you know, let us know in the comments section below. Anyway, we'll move on. Two more questions. Jonas Coughlin. The team outside the top six that you dislike the most besides Everton?
Ooh. I want to say Watford.
Why?
Because
is it because of Bogdan?
It's because we went to Watford and got battered by them.
3-0.
And I remember it well. It was terrible.
The Bogdan corner.
We got Bogdaned.
I'm going to say Southampton. I don't really care about any of the teams outside the top six apart from Everton, to be honest with you. I had to look at the Premier League table to see if anyone riled me up the wrong way. And I looked at it and I went, I don't like any of you.
Stoke have gone, haven't they?
Yeah. Southampton, just because I'm really bored of them.
Yeah.
They used to be a bit of a yo-yo club, and I preferred them that way.
Yeah.
We used to buy all their players, and their fans got a bit of a stink up about it.
Southampton fans hate us.
Fine, and that's why, you know, I don't like it.
On the Wofford thing, I think also the fact that I just think they're a bit of a Southern Everton. Like
they do feel a bit Southern. I mean, Zedcars.
The Zedcars thing as well is a big deal. That riles me. So yeah,
That's a good reason to not like Watford.
There's a few teams in there. To be fair, I always had a bit of a soft spot for Palace growing up because family friends who supported them and what have you. But I really dislike them because I don't. You shouldn't have to work that hard against that team like Crystal Palace to win. But we do. You know what I mean? I still remember us beating them 9-0, but I also remember the FA Cup semi final. So. Yeah,
okay. We have got an absolute belter of a question to end the show on. So, at Robbie Morris 08 says, all-time Prem 11, but you can only use one player from each club.
Okay.
Now, this took a little bit of work.
Mm.
We gave it our full, you know, 3x6 attention, 6 minutes.
3x6 attention?
2 minutes each, times 3, 6 minutes attention.
Six. Not sex.
I did say sex at the beginning.
Right.
3x6.
I just heard sex and I lost my train of thought. Okay, fine.
Totally understandable.
That's fine.
Everybody's there going, what the fuck?
What is happening?
He was doing all right there. There was a couple of times he stumbled over it. He made words up. But other than that, he was generally doing okay, Paul.
I woke up in London this morning and I drove and I'm so tired. I'm so...
What was you after
I had to do the thing. Yeah, week off with the kids. There's no week off.
No, it's true. I had to do the thing. For a break.
I had to do the thing where I had like a cycle of driving where I'd listen to podcasts until I started to nod off and I'd have to listen to some metal to wake me up and then I'd let my head start to hurt after that, too much of that, and then I'd go back to podcasts for a bit and then I'd have to stop for a wee and walk around and shake it off a bit like, and yeah. But anyway, we're here and I've picked... phenomenal all-time Prem 11.
Who you gone with?
I have gone. Bear in mind, there will be much better answers for this.
Oh, mate, I forgot he moved to them.
Yeah, so I have used the fullness of players moving to different clubs to help me through this, which means that I've got Peter Schmeichel in goal.
Villa.
But I've gone Villa. Like, I
wanted Schmeichel in goal. I've written his name, but I couldn't get him.
I wrote, and you won't be able to see it, but I wrote K. Schmeichel and then went, he played for Villa. P. Schmeichel.
Amazing. So I went with Van der Sar at Fulham.
Okay, that's a sound. Same thing. Such a good shout. Yeah.
Same thing. Forgot that Schmeichel went to Villa. But there we go. Right back, let's go.
I've gone for Gary Kelly of Leeds United fame.
You know what? He was a good right back, man.
He was brilliant. But he will be, he's probably one of those who's been forgotten over the years. There's probably people who are under the age of 30. Si, do you know who Gary Kelly is? Yeah, that's fine. Thanks, Si. Put the Si's face up.
Did you just fart?
Like I just took a poo on the front of his car, like.
Again. What?
Gary Kelly.
Gary Neville, yeah. Man United.
Sound. I would have... Did Gary Neville shout sound? I just couldn't not have a Man United player further up the pitch.
I didn't need them, to be fair. I've got a decent little side.
Yeah.
I've gone Colin Hendry from Blackburn.
Yeah, me too.
Rio Ferdinand from Leeds.
I went West Ham. Nice. Rio Ferdinand, yeah.
Ashley Cole from Arsenal or Chelsea? Arsenal.
Gareth Bale from Spurs.
I like that.
Yeah.
I've gone Gareth Bale from Spurs as a winger.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I'm kind of getting two for the price of one.
Okay. My right wing, I've got him cutting in, which he obviously never did in the Premier League, but I've gone Gareth Bale from Spurs.
Okay. You've gone 4-4-2,
haven't you? I've gone old school, mate.
Go on, give us your midfield.
Steven Gerrard from Liverpool.
Obviously.
Kante from Leicester.
Ooh,
it was a shout, that one, wasn't it?
A shout. So I went for a midfield three of Claude Makélélé, Chelsea, Patrick Vieira, Arsenal, Steven Gerrard, Liverpool.
I'm starting to worry, but I have got Kante who can do the work of three players.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I've gone Hazard, Chelsea, left wing.
Okay, and on the other wing?
Bale from Spurs.
Of course. I went with 4-3-3. So my left winger is Ryan Giggs and my right winger was David Silva. Yeah. Decent, that, like.
I can see your forwards. So your forwards, obviously, Alan Shearer from Newcastle.
Uh-huh.
I love the fact that you've got a proper winger that would work with Alan Shearer and Ryan Giggs there. I nearly tried to get Shearer from Newcastle and Stuart Ripley from Blackburn.
Well, I was tempted to go 4-4-2 and have Blackburn Shearer and Newcastle Shearer partnering because Pacey Young Shearer with target man. With target
you
man
want Southampton Shearer then as well?
Ooh.
You could have had that.
Oh, was he? Was that Prem?
I don't know if it was Prem or not. I think it was like 91 or something. Yeah. But I've gone with Shearer and Aguero up front. Classic big man, little man. You know what I mean?
That's a pretty decent team.
Yeah, so obviously Shearer from Newcastle, Aguero from City. Let me know in the comments on YouTube whether you can do better than that.
That's such a good question.
So the rules are simple. You can pick one player from any team, but you have to come up with an all-time Premier League 11. And kudos to @RobbieMorris08 on Twitter, who asked us that one. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Paul, it's been great to have you back, mate.
Thanks. And I'm so happy to be back and hopefully not in the studio for too much longer.
God damn, it's depression.
Yeah.
People, and you know what the most annoying thing is?
Don't like the new studio.
These people, yous, who are commenting all the time. I don't get why they've changed for this shithole. Yeah, we know.
Literally.
We know.
The office is there. Everyone is so annoyed. And I've only literally been here for like an hour.
It's the most depressing place to do a show. Like,
I've got a hard couple of days ahead of me to get this new studio going. But yeah, stay tuned. Stay tuned next week, hopefully, for the next podcast. It should be up and running.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much for watching. Don't forget to like the video, subscribe to us on YouTube. And if you're on iTunes and all them podcast apps that you guys have nowadays, then do give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you thought of the show on Twitter. Thanks very much. Ta-ra.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.